Good day from Wall Street. This is Jack Marks for Wall Street Reporter. Today I'm speaking with Steve Rhodes. He is the co-chairman and co-CEO of Trendlines Group Limited. The ADR in the US is TRNLY, over the counter, and in Singapore the symbol is 42T, as in Tom, so TRNLY. Steve, welcome.
Thank you, Jack. It's great to be with you today.
So Steve, tell us how Trendlines got started and what the business model of your company is.
Trendlines was established just over 11 years ago in Israel to invest in some of the most exciting early-stage companies in the life sciences. My partner, Todd Dollinger, and I established the company after having worked as consultants for many years to the startup industry in Israel, and we saw something really interesting. We saw lots of great ideas, lots of great startups that were failing pretty consistently. And when we asked ourselves why that was happening, our realization was that it was happening because they just didn't have the experience. The founders of the companies didn't have the experience and the skills needed to succeed. So we set up Trendlines in September 2007 as a platform for not only providing capital to very early stage life science companies, but also providing them with an all-encompassing network of support. And the underlying principle is that if the inventor brings a brilliant idea to us, we can give them everything else they need to help them succeed, starting with capital, but including all manner of overhead supports as well as professional services that enable them to reach their goal and succeed, or at least reduce the risk of failure.
So, you're basically, you're an incubator.
Well, we operate incubators. We don't like to describe ourselves as an incubator simply because the term means different things to different people, and we don't see the incubator as the end in itself. We see it as a methodology for reducing risk in the companies that we invest in. We believe that we're an investment company that makes high-risk, early-stage investments and uses incubation as a tool for reducing the risk.
Okay, and so from what I understand, you develop companies in-house with, what is it, Trendlines Labs?
That's right. Our deal flow comes from several sources. It comes from entrepreneurs. It comes from tech transfer from universities and research institutions. And it comes from an in-house innovation group, Trendlines Labs, that actually invents technologies that we can then spin out into portfolio companies.
Okay, and what kind of, now I think also you do life sciences, but also agricultural type companies that you invest in, right?
That's right. We invest in two areas, medical devices and agricultural technologies. Both, of course, relate to biological systems and in a broad sense are both they're both life sciences, although the markets are very different.
Okay. And what the what's your investment criteria? What's the kind of Trendlines investment strategy? What kind of companies do you look for? Is it a management team or technology specifically? What's Tell us about that.
No. So we see about 600 deals a year and invest about 1 to 1.5% of the opportunities that we see. We're looking for technologies that address unmet needs in the marketplace. We want the technologies, obviously, to be protectable through intellectual property. But probably the most important thing we look at is the team. Because our business model is to be so hands-on and to be so deeply involved in the companies, it's really important for us that we can work well with the entrepreneurs in whom we invest. They literally sit in our offices for their first 2 or 3 years. We see them on a daily basis. And if we don't get along well with one another, if there isn't good chemistry, if they don't play well with others, it's just not going to work.
So all your portfolio companies are physically in your offices or at your facilities?
Initially, they are. That's one of our requirements. In their first 2 or 3 years, they sit in our offices. In some cases, they stay in our offices for many years. In other cases, as they grow and expand, they move out. But during those first 2 years, our staff of almost 40 people surrounds them with support. We provide all the overhead services for the companies, the bookkeeping, the accounting, the legal, the admin, the secretarial services. But we also have a staff of consultants who work with the companies on almost a daily basis, doing market research, marketing communications, business development, human resources, financial consulting, technology consulting, and essentially investment banking. So it's really critical that they sit in our offices where we can interact with them on a regular basis.
What other kind of value add do you offer these portfolio companies?
I would say that in addition to the financing and the broad team of support, we also have an amazing network of international contacts that we bring to bear for our portfolio companies. We have formal relationships with some large international companies like B. Braun from Germany or Bayer Crop Science, but we also have relationships with many other companies around the world. And many of those relationships are brought to bear for our companies. Johnson & Johnson recently invested in one of our portfolio companies. A large European feed company, Nutreco, has invested in one of our companies. We have Chinese corporations that are invested in portfolio companies. So those relationships that we have are very important for our portfolio, both in terms of raising capital as well as in getting important access to markets and information about the markets.
Interesting. And how? What's the size of the current portfolio? How many companies do you currently have?
At the end of September, we had 51 companies in the portfolio.
51, okay. And how many of them are actually at your facility right now, physically?
Wow. I'm not sure for the exact number. I'm going to guess that in Israel, they're somewhere between 15 to 20 companies sitting in there in our offices.
Okay.
And in Singapore, another four or five.
Okay. So you also have an operation in Singapore it's a similar type of operation?
That's correct. We set up Trendlines Medical in Singapore almost 2 years ago, doing substantially the same thing that we do in Israel, looking for great technologies, establishing companies, and building those companies.
And Trendlines Singapore, are those the companies in that portfolio? Those are local Singapore or Asian companies?
All of the companies in at Trendlines Medical Singapore are Singapore domiciled, Singapore incorporated companies. Just like in Israel, the technology doesn't necessarily have to come from Israel or Singapore. We can import technology. But the companies that we create are always located either in our facility in Israel or in Singapore, and they are incorporated locally.
Okay. And what's the size of a typical investment? You know, how is it structured?
It's a little bit of a story, and I apologize. The total
Take your
investment
time.
When we start a new company, the total investment is about $1.4 million. But that $1.4 million is broken up into two components. Roughly $800,000 is direct investment into the startup. The other $600,000 is the cost to us of providing all of the support that we provide over the first 2 years. Remember I said that they sit in our offices and we provide them with all the overheads. We don't charge for any of those services. And in the same way, we don't charge for any of the professional services we provide them. Our accountants have calculated that the value, actually the out-of-pocket cost, is about $300,000 a year per company to provide those services. Now, the $800,000 of direct investment is also a little bit complicated because only 15% of that investment, about $120,000, comes from our capital. The other 85%, about $680,000, is a grant that is received from the Israeli government in Israel for our portfolio companies. It's a great leverage. The government does not take equity or liens on the assets of the companies. And that leverage enables us to reduce our risk in what are inherently very high-risk companies.
And it's a grant. It doesn't have to be repaid?
It's what they call a contingent grant, which means that although the government doesn't receive shares or liens or personal guarantees of any sort, in the event of success, the grant is repaid as a royalty from sales.
Okay. And is it, so it's basically, is it a percentage type of thing where you put up X and the government matches by a multiple of that, or how does that work?
Yeah, the investment on average is around $800,000. It varies slightly up or down depending on the nature of the company, but for the most part, it's right in that range. And the government's participation is 85%.
And so all your portfolio companies get the same size investment?
As I said, with some minor exceptions, for example, companies that have medical device companies typically receive a larger grant than agricultural technology companies or larger investment. If a company has a biotech component, which some of our agriculture companies have, then the investments are larger. So there is a range of sorts, but it works out to an average around $800,000 that's budgeted to last the company for 2 years.
Okay, so let's get into some more interesting things. Tell us, about the current portfolio. Which companies are you most excited about right now?
That's a tough question because I love all my children.
Right.
Equally.
What about your favorite children? What are your top five favorite children?
I'll tell you, we issue a report every quarter called 10 Companies to Watch, which are 10 of our most advanced companies, 10 companies that we think have made a lot of progress and are close to market or are in market. And so we believe that they comprise a lot of our value or potential value. A couple of interesting companies there. One is a company called Apifix, which has amazing technology for treating adolescent idiopathic scoliosis, which is a curvature of the spine in teenagers, particularly teenage girls, although no one knows the reason that it's more severe in girls. In extreme cases, these kids have to go to surgery, and the surgery they do today is extremely traumatic. Apifix has come up with a better way of treating these patients with a surgical procedure that's much less invasive. Instead of taking 6 to 8 hours, the surgical procedure only takes 45 minutes to an hour. Instead of requiring 20 to 24 pedicle screws, only requires 2. And the child doesn't lose flexibility in her back after the surgery, which is what happens in the current surgery today. The procedure is also a lot cheaper than the existing procedure, and we've done almost 300 cases to date. So it's with some of them with up to 5 and even more years of follow-up. So it's very tested. It's something that addresses a big need, and it also has a great impact on the quality of life for the kids that we that have the procedure done. So that's something we're real excited about. Another company, and by the way, I can keep talking about companies forever. So at some point,
you can go ahead. Maybe if you want to kind of pick like 5 and a few of the medical and a few of the agricultural, something which really gives kind of an example, really exemplifies kind of the trend line strategy. Like what's the
So let me tell you about another one of our medical companies, a company called Leviticus Cardio, which has incredible technology for patients with congestive heart failure. Today, the best treatment for heart failure is transplant, but there are very few hearts available. So the next best treatment is implantation of a device called a left ventricular assist device, or an LVAD. It's essentially a secondary heart that assists the heart to pump. The problem with the LVAD is that it requires a lot of energy, and so the patients today have to have a cable coming out of their belly attached 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to batteries that they have to carry around with them. It has a huge negative impact on quality of life. It's also a constant source of infection risk. The patient has to spend about a half hour a day just keeping the site clean to try to reduce the risk of infection. And the dream of the cardiology world has been to develop a safe, reliable, and robust way of providing energy wirelessly to the pumps to get rid of that, that drive line, that cable that provides the energy. Leviticus has done it. They've succeeded in developing the world's first safe and reliable method for providing energy wirelessly to heart pumps. Just a couple weeks ago, we issued a press release announcing that we've now kept an animal alive for more than 180 days. That's really a breakthrough technology that has the potential, we believe, to increase the size of the market dramatically and the accessibility of this device to thousands of people who need it but aren't getting it today. So that's very, very exciting technology. Maybe I'll mention a couple of our agriculture companies. I just had a board meeting today for one of our companies called Bioefficiency. Bioefficiency has a device for basically treating water on fish farms. When you're growing fish commercially in a farm, the limiting factor is the quality of the water. As you add more fish to the water becomes polluted and you can't put more fish in. Bioefficiency has a low-cost turnkey system that makes it possible to immediately start getting cleaner water and essentially double the number of fish that you can grow in a pond. The company started selling just in the last couple of years. Last year, they did about $400,000 of sales. This year, we expect them to reach about $1.3 million of sales. We expect sales next year to at least double. The company is growing very rapidly, and it's doing it while also providing an important benefit to farmers around the world, particularly in Asia, where most of the aquaculture industry is located. Another exciting agriculture company is a company called Eden Shield. Eden Shield has a completely natural, biological, and non-toxic way to protect crops from insect damage. The company has developed a material that's derived from a plant that naturally grows in the desert in Israel. We have domesticated that plant, so we grow it commercially. And from that plant, we derive this material, and we essentially create an invisible fence around crops, putting the material around a hothouse, and it keeps the bugs from entering the hothouse. They just don't go in. We've had studies where we've seen a 95% reduction in insect damage, and it's completely non-toxic, so it has no impact on the environment. In fact, you could drink this stuff. You wouldn't want to, but you could. So that's a fourth company, and I'm trying to think of a fifth company that would be interesting. You know, I'll mention something from agriculture, but in a different direction completely. We have a company called FruitSpec. One of the interesting developments we've seen in the last couple of years in the ag tech world is more and more crossover technology from the high-tech field. FruitSpec was started by an entrepreneur from the tech world who had an idea for how to count fruit on trees when the fruit is still very small and still green. It turns out that this is extremely important information for the marketplace, not only for growers, but also downstream for people who are buying and selling the fruit. If you're a packing house, you typically pre-sell the harvest at the beginning of the season. The problem is you don't really know how much fruit there's going to be, and there is no existing reliable method for counting the fruit on the tree when it's small and green. So what happens is you go out and you sell the fruit, and then when you take delivery 5-6 months later, if you don't have enough fruit to meet your contract, you have to go into the spot market and buy fruit at very high prices. And on the other hand, if you have too much fruit, you end up dumping it. So what FruitSpec has is technology that uses multispectral imaging and artificial intelligence to accurately count the amount of quite small, still green, differentiating between their green fruits and the leaves. It's information that's valuable, as I said, to packing houses, to distributors, and eventually we think even to commodities traders who are maybe trading in orange juice futures or palm oil futures. So it's extremely valuable information, and although it's an ag tech company, when we think about it, it really is a fintech company providing valuable information that's important for people when they're buying and selling.
Interesting. So this, it's a device that basically what connects to a computer and it counts the number of fruits on a tree.
It's a sensor that you would put on a tractor, drive up and down the rows of an orchard, and it counts the fruit. That's exactly right. It counts the fruit on the tree when you still really can't eat. You know, even visually, if you were to walk into the orchard and look, you would have a hard time seeing the fruit because it's green fruit against a green background. But we're able to pick it out and count it, and we get accuracy of plus or minus 5%, which is pretty amazing.
That's like counting jelly beans in a jar.
You know what? It's even harder because at least the jelly beans have color against a different background. And here we're talking about counting green jelly beans in a green jar.
And so it's a sensor mounted on a tractor. I mean, I'm assuming can this also be, I don't know, you know, mounted on a drone to get the same results?
Putting it on a drone is actually difficult because when you fly over the tops of the crops, the tops of the trees, from above the canopy, you don't see enough of the tree.
Okay.
And flying a drone through the rows of the trees is difficult because of all the branches and obstacles in the way. We think the easiest way is just to put it on a tractor or even on a golf cart or a motorcycle.
Simple enough, yeah.
And just have somebody drive up and down the rows.
Huh. Is this product in the commercialization phase right now?
It's actually launching now. We've done commercial pilots in the United States, in Israel, in South Africa, and in other locations, and we're now going to market in 2019.
Interesting. So, Steve, let's talk about some of the results. I should have asked you this earlier, but I have the benefit of looking at your presentation. And by the way, anybody who's listening to this or reading the interview, they can actually see all the 10 companies that are in the most developed. I think you called most.
We actually have two different reports. One is the 10 most valuable portfolio companies, which just shows where the value is concentrated, and that shows up in our investor presentation on our website. And the other is a quarterly report that we call 10 Companies to Watch.
10 to Watch,
There's a lot of overlap between the two reports, but they're not identical.
Okay, yeah, so we'll have your presentation right on the interview page, so anybody can, you know, flip through the PDF. But let me ask you about the track record you've developed, which is pretty interesting. So can you give us kind of like an overview of, you know, what the track record has been, and then also get into, you know, some of the biggest hits and the biggest misses?
Okay. So as I said, we have 51 companies in the portfolio today. The total book value of those, carrying value of those 51 companies at September 30th was $102.5 million. Over the years, we've started about 90 companies. We've written off 30 companies, so not everything works. We have written off about a third of the companies that we've started over the years. We've had 8 exits to date, all through trade sales where we sold the companies to buyers in the marketplace. The average return on investment on those 8 exits was 10.1x, and the average IRR on the 10 exits was 95%. What's interesting is that the average sale price or the average value created from the exits was 3.5 times greater than the carrying value on our books on the eve of the exit. So even though we are constantly remarking our portfolio and adjusting it upwards or downwards based on the performance of the portfolio companies, even the companies that are close to exit on average have been undervalued by a factor of about 70% on the eve of their exits, with the actual exit value being 3.5 times greater than the carrying value on our books.
Interesting. How do you determine the carrying value?
The carrying value is determined quarterly by an independent evaluation firm. We review the entire portfolio on a quarterly basis. Where there's been a change in a company, and typically by a change we mean either a raise of capital from a third-party investor or some negative event that we think reduces the value of the company. Where there's been a change in the value of the company, we send the company out for valuation to the third-party firm. In most cases, the valuations are done simply based on the value of the last money in the transaction value of the last investment. Although when we're writing it down, then we have to look more closely and figure out how much to write it down and what the chances are of a company recovering. Those valuations are done by this third-party firm, and then they are reviewed by our auditors, Ernst & Young. I said we do that on a quarterly basis where there's been some event, but in any case, every company is reviewed at least once a year, even if there hasn't been any material event, just to make sure that the valuations are current.
So based on, you know, the exits, you know, the successful exits, it looks like, you know, your valuations have been, you know, relatively conservative.
Yes, that's what we believe. And that's highlighted by the fact that the return has been on average 3.5 times greater than the book value or the carrying value on the eve of the exit.
Wow. What have been some of the, you know, the greatest hits that you've had?
I think by the biggest exit we've had to date was a company called Stematics GI. We sold Stematics assets to B. Braun in Germany about 4 years ago. Stematics was a company that has developed an amazing technology for people with colostomy. Colostomy is a surgical procedure where a person colon is rerouted out the side of their abdomen and they have to walk around for the rest of their lives with a bag attached collecting fecal matter as it comes out the opening. It's life-saving surgery, but it has a huge negative impact on quality. And what Stematics has done is come up with a low-cost device that makes it possible to get it, to essentially get rid of the bag. What it has is a bag folded up inside it. If you see a patient who has the Stematics device on, you would think that they just have a bandage on their belly. And when they feel pressure building up behind it, they go into the bathroom like anyone else, open the device, the bag comes out, fills, and they remove it and put a new one on. So we've returned continence to these patients. The product is coming to market now. It's priced to be competitive with the bags that are in the market today. And in clinical studies that we've done in the past, the patients who participated in the studies basically almost unanimously said that they would never go back to using a bag.
And what are the numbers like in this deal? You sold Stematics, the assets?
Yeah, we sold the assets. The deal had three components, a cash element, a set of milestone payments, and royalties. Unfortunately, we haven't disclosed those numbers at the request of our partner B. Braun, but the carrying value of Stematics today on our books is around $39 million, which is the estimated present value of the royalty stream going forward after taking discounts not only for the cost of capital but also a variety of risk factors like manufacturing risk, clinical risk, competitive risk, regulatory risk. So net of all of those risk factors and discounting for the cost of capital, The asset is worth today almost $40 million on our books, which bizarrely is close to our current market cap, which means that the market really just isn't giving any value to the rest of the portfolio, which I think is just wrong.
So you I think you said 51 other portfolio companies right now?
We have a total of 51 companies, including Stimatics.
Okay, so 50 companies you're getting. So if you buy the stock now, you're getting 50 companies for free, basically.
That's right.
What a deal.
Yeah, well, that's my opinion, but it's just an opinion.
What about some of the other big exits that you've had?
So all of the exits are listed on our website. Let me find them and mention a couple more. Sold a company called ETView 2 years ago. ETView was sold to a Danish company called Ambu. It was a $16 million exit. ETView had an endotracheal tube that's used in surgical procedures. That was a nice exit. A company called Inspiro Medical was sold to Opco Health. Opco, as you may know, is a publicly traded pharmaceutical company from Miami. Inspiro, we had an 8.8x return on investment. We had 131% IRR on the investment, so that was very nice. We had a company called FlowSense, which we sold to Baxter back in 2013. The IRR on that deal was about 280%, so that was a nice return for us. Just last year, we sold a company called Mitrasist. That was a small deal. We sold another one, BioSite, where we had a 71% IRR. So those are just a handful of our exits. By the way, and again, they're all listed. And all the numbers show up and all the names of the buyers on the website.
Okay. And what do you think that, or what have you found that, like, some of the winning companies have in common? And I guess the same could be said of some of the write-offs. What are there any common denominators?
Oh, that's a tough one. You know, I guess you have to start from the market. Have you identified a solution that the market needs? That's a necessary determinant of success, because no one's going to buy a company if they don't think that there's a market for the device. So we have to come with a solution that the market needs and wants. That's for starters. I think the next issue is the people involved. The companies may have great technology addressing real unmet needs, but unless you have the right people running the companies, the chances of getting to the finish line are greatly reduced. So I think that's an important as well. The failures are all over the place in terms of the reasons. In a few cases, it's been that we just didn't do a good job picking the right people. In a couple of cases, as we were developing a product, we encountered technological challenges or hurdles that we just felt were either too great to overcome or would take too much time and effort to overcome. In some cases, the marketplace, I think, overtook us and came out with better solutions. So the failures really come from lots of different factors. We try to learn from the failures all the time. We do a quarterly meeting where we review the write-offs from the previous quarter. We try to do a post-mortem to identify what were the mistakes that we made in making the investment decision, or after the investment decision, in working with the companies and nurturing them. But there's no single factor that I can point to and say this is why companies fail.
What do you find are some of the biggest challenges that you have, you know, in your business? Is it, I mean, do you, in terms of, is it getting the right deal flow, quality of deal flow? I mean, do you find yourself maybe competing with other VCs or maybe other incubators, or what do you find is the most challenging part right now?
There is competition for deal flow. I don't think that's our biggest challenge. I think that generally speaking, we see the best deals, and in many cases they come to us because we do have a reputation for being one of the best, if not the best, early stage investors in Israel in our fields. My personal belief is that our biggest challenge is raising follow-on capital for portfolio companies. Given that we're investing for 2 years, at the end of those 2 years, we need to go out and raise additional capital for the companies, and I believe that that's the biggest risk factor in our whole business model. We're actually pretty good at it. This year, I think we've raised capital for 18 companies so far, and we may actually have another deal or two closing before the end of the year, although there's not a lot of time left.
Six
so
days.
It's a good success rate. We like to say that we are the largest non-compensated investment bank in Israel, but despite the fact that we have that good success rate, every deal is difficult. It's hard work. We put a lot of effort into helping the companies raise capital, and it's the thing that I worry about the most is getting capital for our companies.
How do you raise the follow-on capital? Is it, I mean, where do you source it?
Wherever we can. Historically, we've had capital come in from venture capital, from angels, from strategics. Actually, in the last 2 or 3 years, we've seen a very big upturn in strategic investments, which I think is great. A lot more money is coming in now from strategic investors, from industry players who want to get into a company early, and we're encouraging that and investing a lot of time and effort developing those relationships and trying to bring more of that. But it's really from everywhere.
Steve, can you tell us about, your background and also some of the other key members of the team?
Sure. My background is in finance and marketing and business development. I started my career in the medical device industry back in 1988 with an Israeli startup company that had some nice successes. In 1993, my partner Todd Dollinger and I started a consulting practice, and over the next 15 years or so, we consulted here in Israel to literally hundreds of startups from the tech world, but especially from the life sciences. And that's where we started developing the ideas that we had about how to invest in early stage companies and what the mistakes were that were being made and how to correct those mistakes and do it better. Dr. Nitza Kardish, who is the CEO of our incubator in Israel, has a PhD in molecular plant biology. She originally joined us to head our ag tech investing activity, but actually Nitza has spent more than 20 years as a life science investor, and not only in ag tech, but also in medical devices. So she has a wealth of experience in the two areas that we work in. Nitza's been an entrepreneur herself. And one of the things that we've done in the last couple of years that Nitza's really spearheaded is turning Israel into a world leader in the ag tech space. So that's another one of our leaders. Eric Lo, who's the CEO of Trendlines Medical Singapore, is a biomedical engineer who was one of the founders or one of the early engineers in employees of Biosensors International. Biosensors was the biggest and most successful Singapore medical device startup. In fact, it's still the largest Singapore medical device company. Eric was at Biosensors for a number of years in senior management positions all the way through their IPO. And so we're very, very happy to have Eric with us. Of course, our CFO, Chaim Brosch, is someone who's been in the financial reporting world for many years, both in the United States, in Europe, and in Israel as the CFO of public companies. So it's a strong team.
What's your vision for the company over the next 2-3 years?
That's a great question. We want to do a few things. Our first focus is on building the existing portfolio, supporting our existing companies, helping them raise capital, and helping to get to exits. We believe that the market very much wants to see exits from this portfolio. It's an important validation of the underlying valuations. The more I can sell companies at 3.5 or 4 times my carrying value, the more the market will believe that that carrying value is real. So we're very focused on working with and supporting our existing companies. That's a primary focus. A secondary focus, or a second focus in the next couple of years, is to build up a new activity in Singapore in the ag tech area. Just in the last 2 weeks, we announced our intention to establish an innovation center in Singapore, funded by a $40 million venture fund that we're in the process of raising now. There's huge interest in Singapore, in turning Singapore into an agri-food tech center for the entire region, and we think that we can take a very active and leading role in that. Third area that I would like to see us do is continue to grow the portfolio. Today we have 51 companies. There's no reason it shouldn't be 60 or 70 companies. So long as we can support those companies, so long as we have the capital to do it and the bandwidth to work with them, I think the more shots on goal we take, the stronger we are, the better the chance of mega exits. And I believe that we have the potential for some mega exits in the next couple of years.
Okay. And what about, what are some of the, in the short term, like what are some of the key milestones that you have coming up in 2019 that investors should keep an eye on?
One, of course, is the beginning of royalties from Stimatics. We believe that we will start seeing royalty checks coming from that asset sale during 2019, and so that's an important thing to watch.
And what's the size of those royalty checks?
Unfortunately, we can't disclose the terms of the royalty agreement. I can just say that it's a long-term royalty agreement. And the present value of our share, we have about 28% of the company. The present value of our share of those royalties is around $39 million. But I can't disclose anything more about it than that.
Okay.
So that's something to watch for in 2019. It's an important milestone. Another important milestone will be the establishment of this new $40 million fund. It's a great way to increase our potential return, to increase our optionality with no downside. It's a fund that enables us to invest in additional ag tech companies without diluting our shareholders. Trendlines will act as the general partner, and so we'll receive management fees and carried interest from the fund. And I think that that's something that's going to be very important for our story in 2019.
What's going to be the size of the carried interest in that fund?
Carried interest will be a 20% carry. It's a pretty standard 2-in-20 fund.
Okay. And this is going to be based in Singapore, or investments in Singapore-based companies then?
One-third of the portfolio will be Singapore-based startups, and two-thirds of the investments will actually be in companies from around the world. In later stage, companies coming in the commercialization stage. So it's really a blended early late stage fund.
Okay, interesting. And what else? I'm sorry I interrupted you. What else do you have coming up in 2019 we should watch?
I think that within the portfolio itself, there should be lots of interesting developments in terms of raises, achieving very significant milestones, as well as seeing increasing sales. I mentioned before, Biofficiency, which more than doubled its sales from last year to this year, and we think we'll more than double its sales again next year. We have other companies like FruitSpec, which we spoke about, and another company called AgroScout, both of which, and actually Saturus, a third ag tech company. They're all launching sales in early 2019. So we're going to see a lot of initial sales activity from our portfolio companies in 2019. We have several companies that I think will have very significant announcements relating either to FDA clearances or clinical trials. These are all forward-looking statements, of course, and we can't know for sure that they're going to happen. But given the size of the portfolio and the number of things going on within the portfolio today, I think there are a lot of good announcements coming out of the portfolio in 2019.
Okay, and so my last question is going to be, in your opinion, what are the top three reasons investors should consider buying your stock today?
The company is very well run. We were recognized by a Singapore Institute of Shareholders as being one of the best governed, most transparent companies listed in Singapore. So we provide a lot of information, and we try to run our company in a way that shares information openly with our shareholders. We have a portfolio value that's $102.5 million and a market cap that's only around $40 million. And if you net out the cash on our balance sheet as of September, you get closer to a market cap of $30 million. So we're trading at an enormous discount to the carrying value of our portfolio. We think there's a lot of value there. And the fundamentals of the companies themselves, I think, are very, very exciting. I think we have companies within the portfolio today that the individual companies themselves could be worth more than our total market cap. Certainly one that we talked about is Stimatics, but there are other companies that I believe could have exits of an equal or similar order of magnitude. So there's a lot of value locked up in the company, and we're very eager to talk about what we do. By the way, our website has a wealth of information about every single portfolio company, about what we do, and we invite people to contact us and talk to us, engage with us.
Steve, on that note, I want to thank you, and we look forward to following the Trendline story in 2019.
Jack, thank you very much, and I wish everyone a great 2019.